Today, the market grabs at straws. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm the latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, the markets are starting to believe that central banks are going to blink, as we saw yesterday when the RBA lifted the cash rate by a less than expected 0.25%, although, as I said, one smaller rate rise does not a pivot make. The S&P 500 index actually posted its biggest single day rally in 2 years on Tuesday, after softer US economic data and Australia's smaller-than-expected interest rate hike, which together stirred hopes of less aggressive tightening by the Federal Reserve. Now, arguably, the RBA is the first major central bank to recognise that now is the time to slow down after aggressively raising interest rates this year, said Anthony Simiglie, chief market strategist at Ameriprise Financial. There's hope that the Federal Reserve at some point in the fourth quarter will say the same thing. Not stop rising interest rates, but just slow the pace, he said. That's what the market's kind of rallying on below the surface. But still, Fed Governor Philip Jefferson said inflation is the most serious problem facing the US Central Bank, and it may take some time to address. And San Francisco President Mary Daly said the central bank needs to deliver more rate hikes. And overnight, the US Labor Department, in its Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, or JOLTS, showed vacancies remained above 10 million in the US for the 14th straight month. But US job openings did fall by the most in nearly 2.5 years in August, suggesting to some that the labour market was starting to cool as the economy grapples with higher interest rates aimed at dampening demand and taming inflation. Job openings dropped 1.1 million to 10.1 million on the last day of August. That's the lowest level since mid-2021. While there were still 1.7 job openings for every unemployed person in August, that's down from 2 in July. And this closely watched measure of supply-demand balance in the labour market remains above its historical averages. Layoffs also stayed low, signs of a still tight labour market, which will likely keep the Federal Reserve on its aggressive monetary policy tightening path. Even as higher interest rates and inflation and weaker business and consumer confidence are beginning to tamp down labour market activity, the labour market still remains healthy, said Sophia Korapiewicz, a senior economist at Moody's Analytics. We expect that the Fed is not yet ready to pause. Job openings fell to the lowest since June last year and were very broad-based and spanned most industries and all business sizes, Jefferies said in the note. And if the slowdown in labour demand continues and core inflation, which excludes food and energy prices, falls as much as we expect, the Fed will not be hiking by 125 basis points by the end of the year, said Pantheon Macroeconomics. The day before, data showed that US manufacturing activity increased at its slowest pace in nearly 2.5 years in September as new orders contracted, likely as rising interest rates to tame inflation cooled demand for goods. The Institute for Supply Management said its manufacturing PMI dropped to 50.9 this month, missing estimates but still above 50, indicating growth. The odds of a Fed delivering its fourth consecutive 75 basis point rate hike is still at around 69%. That's down a bit from last week, but still pretty strong. The economic data stream actually came in worse than expected, and in a very counterintuitive fashion, that likely represents good news for equity markets, said Art Hogan, chief market strategist at B. Riley Wealth in Boston. While good economic data has been a catalyst for selling, this is the first time we've actually seen some negative news to be a catalyst, he said. And overnight on Monday, we also heard that the British government dropped plans to cut income tax for top earners, a small element of their package of unfunded cuts that sparked turmoil on financial markets and sent the pound to record lows last week. Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng said that he will not scrap the top 45% rate for income tax paid on earnings above £150,000 a year. "We get it and we've listened," he said. And he said it was clear that the abolition of the 45% tax rate had become a distraction from the overriding mission to tackle the challenges facing the country. "Reducing taxes for top earners and scrapping a cap on bankers' bonuses while millions face a cost of living crisis driven by soaring energy bills was widely seen as politically toxic." The backflip comes after a growing number of politicians from the governing Conservative Party turned on government tax plans that were announced just 10 days ago. This was a late change of mind, as Prime Minister Liz Truss had defended the measures a day earlier, though she did concede that she could have done a better job at laying the ground for the announcements. And of the £45 billion of unfunded growth policies, only about £2 billion were directly connected to the proposed tax cut. The high-level programme, which was not supported with the usual details in terms of budget impact, sent the pound tumbling to a record low against the dollar and put pressure on long-term bond rates, which forced the Bank of England to intervene to prop up the bond markets. Meantime, banks pulled cheaper mortgages, expecting a more significant rate hike from the central bank. Truss and Kwarteng insist that their plan would deliver a growing economy and eventually bring in more tax revenue, offsetting the costs of borrowing to fund the current cost. But they also have signalled that public spending would need to be slashed. Kwarteng said the government was sticking to its other tax policies, including a cut next year in the basic rate of income tax and a reversal of a corporation tax hike planned by the previous government. And the pound rose after the announcements to around the value it held before the September 23 budget announcements, and bond rates came back. But there are also signs of further backflips ahead, so let's keep watching that. Now, more broadly, despite the rebound in risk assets, markets are still bracing for more turbulence later this week, as a crucial reading on the still tight US labour market is set to give traders a chance to reassess the Fed's commitment to its aggressive path of rate hikes. Friday's release of September job figures looms as a test for the central bank's plan to rein in inflation by tightening policy further and unwinding its mammoth balance sheet. The Fed could consider stopping its tightening campaign after one more rate hike in November, according to Ed Yardini, who coined terms like Fed model and bond vigilantes. The stress in financial markets from big rate increases, a surging dollar and quantitative tightening has reached the point that officials should make financial stability the top priority, he added. Investors are starting to doubt central banks globally will remain aggressive with fighting inflation as financial stability risks are growing, said Ed Moyer at Onya. It is too early to call for a Fed pivot, but it seems the action in Treasury markets suggests traders are growing confident that the global growth slowdown is starting to drag down pricing pressures. Rate-sensitive tech stocks rose as yields on the benchmark 10-year Treasury fell in a second day in a row after the jobs data and the RBA surprise move. Valuations on tech and other growth stocks fell. Of course, valuations on tech stocks and other growth stocks fall when their cost of capital rises. In fact, it was the biggest one-day gain for the S&P 500 since May 2020, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 posted their biggest two-day rallies since April 2020. The repercussions of higher rates will likely be reflected in corporate results when earnings season begins in a couple of weeks in the US, said Dennis Dick, founder and market structure analyst at Triple D Trading. We are still in for a tougher time here, I think. I do think that this earnings season is going to be not good, he said. If one of the big guns warned, that could end the rally rather quickly. This is just a relief rally, as opposed to the start of a new bull market. And billionaire Elon Musk proposed going ahead with his original offer of $54.20 to take Twitter private, sending the social media firm shares surging 22.24%. Twitter was the largest percentage gainer on the S&P 500. Tesla shares had been up about 6% before the news and immediately paired gains, ending up just 2.9% on the day. The mega cap titans led the rally, with Amazon climbing 4.5% and Microsoft rising 3.3%, Apple rose 2.56%, and Google parent Alphabet added 3.04%. And banks such as Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman Sachs all climbed more than 3%. So the rally was broad-based, with just six stocks in the S&P 500 closing lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 2.8% to 30,316. The S&P 500 gained 3.06% to 3,790. And the Nasdaq Composite added 3.34% to 11,176. The rebound, of course, comes when the S&P 500 hit its lowest close in nearly 2 years last week, which capped its worst monthly performance in September since March 2020. And Rivian Automotive jumped 13.8% after the electric vehicle maker said it produced 7,363 units in the third quarter, which is 67% more than the preceding quarter, and maintained its full-year target of 25,000. Now, Credit Suisse Group shares briefly turned positive in a wild day of trading on Monday that saw them drop as much as 12% before climbing back to nearly where they closed last week. In fact, the stock recovered late on Monday after several analysts published notes bolstering bank executive arguments that the firm has ample capital and liquidity to weather the current uncertainty and market volatility. That's ahead of its second restructuring in as many years. The gyrations came on a day in which the stock plunged to a fresh record low and costs to insure the bank's debt against default jumped to its highest ever level. Markets took fright at attempts by top management to reassure investors about the firm's capital strength and liquidity, instead focusing investors' attention on dramatic recent stock and credit spread moves. In fact, the turmoil was sparked by a memo from Chief Executive Officer Ulrich Körner, in which he had sought to play down speculation surrounding the bank's overhaul plans, which it expects to announce on October the 27th. While arguing that the bank's capital levels and liquidity are strong, he acknowledged that the bank is at a critical moment. While that, and a barrage of commentary on Twitter over the weekend, called a rush to the exits when trading resumed, some analysts attempted to calm investor tensions. The liquidity position is very healthy, analysts at Citigroup said in a note to investors. Rather than liquidity concerns, we see the current move in spreads as an inconvenience for funding costs. The Switzerland-based Credit Suisse is not just another commercial bank. It's a vital cog in the global financial system. The Sovereign Wealth Fund Institute ranks Credit Suisse as the world's 23rd largest bank and the second largest in Switzerland. According to last July's earnings report, the bank managed $1.4 trillion in assets, but that's down about 12% from the first half of 2021. The bank attributed the decline to a 29% decrease in revenue year over year, driven by a 43% drop in investment bank revenues. And at the same time, the asset management revenues went down by around 25%. Year to date, Credit Suisse shares aligned accordingly, losing about 6% of their value. And according to S&P Global Market Intelligence last Friday, Credit Suisse's five-year credit default swaps increased by 6 basis points, nearing 247 basis points as the highest level in a decade. And on Monday, CDSs climbed further to 355 basis points. That's the highest in over 2 decades from the year's start of just 57 basis points. Credit default swaps are financial derivatives used for insuring exposure of the lender's debt. In other words, these derivatives swap debt, such as bonds risk, with a counterparty. And credit default swap spreads expressed in basis points is the difference between a corporate bond and a sovereign bond, such as a treasury note. Therefore, the higher rate translates to higher risk. In addition to higher credit default swap risk, Credit Suisse bonds denominated in euros hit a record low on Monday. Long-dated bonds suffered the worst decline, with the 2032 bonds dropping under 70 euro cents, while 2023 bonds dropped to 53 euro cents. When such a large bank as Credit Suisse is viewed as risky, it doesn't take much to inject financial contagion, similar to what the digital asset space has seen during the post-terror collapse. When both the Fed and the ECB started raising interest rates, this changed the dynamic of debt servicing. According to Credit Suisse's most recent fixed income investor presentation, the bank holds around $200 billion in short and long-term debt. Customer deposits make up the bulk of the bank's funding at 53%, with the rest relying on debt and other liabilities. Over half of the bank's long-term debt consists of over three-year debt maturity. The question is, for Credit Suisse's liabilities remain stable, how are those loans collateralized? While the bank frames this as highly collateralized debt, the level of vulnerability is poised to increase if the market goes down further into a deep recession. This is in addition to rising CDS credit spreads, which make debt challenging to refinance. The decline of Credit Suisse shares acts as another signal pressure in that direction, which is why Credit Suisse engaged in emergency customer assurance over the weekend. After the 4.7 billion Huang incident, the bank outlined a strategic plan in July to evaluate strategic options for the securitized products business, which includes attracting third-party capital. And last week, Credit Suisse's press release emphasized this plan again while imposing a reduction of expenses of around 15.5 billion Swiss francs alongside kickstarting initiatives, including potential divestitures and asset sales. And the bank's third quarter report will be released on October the 27th. More broadly, though, as we saw last week, market instability remains the most significant risk to central banks globally. And despite their desire to combat surging inflation, market instability is a greater risk to global economies due to the massive amounts of leverage. The surge in the dollar accompanied the sharpest increase in interest rates in history, and sharp increases in interest rates, particularly in a heavily indebted economy, are problematic as debt servicing requirements and borrowing costs surge. Interest rates alone can destabilize an economy, but when combined with a surging dollar and inflation, the risks of market instability increase markedly. So after more than 12 years of the most unprecedented monetary policy program in US history, the Federal Reserve has put itself into a pretty poor position. They risk an inflation spiral if they don't hike rates to quell inflation. And if the Fed hikes rates to kill inflation, the risk of a recession and market instability increases. So central banks around the world generally are caught in this dilemma: chase inflation and risk a recession, or look away from inflation and not worry about it. But then, of course, that creates more problems later. So I'm afraid that we are dealing with significant pressures within the financial systems globally. And therefore, it doesn't surprise me to see market volatility as people try to surge towards hope, grasping a few more straws, but also need to look down and understand that the financial plumbing is looking pretty wonky at the moment, and the central banks have limited wriggle room. Therefore, don't expect markets to see this ultimately as the bottom. This is just another in that volatile movements of up and down, and another bear market rally that will at some point run out of steam. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.